Welcome back to the Kicks and Picks podcast, guys. Coach Steve and Scotty here with you. Nick should be arriving shortly. We don't know. I mean, if you've been listening to us for a while, you know this happens from time to time. But with us, we have Leg and Oaks from the 2 Foot Talk podcast. These guys have been busy during this Euros and Copa, and we welcome them on to talk about the Euro knockout rounds that are coming up in a couple days. So, guys, welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're obviously buddies with Nick, but we're always happy to do a program, whether or not his computer wants to cooperate and show up. We just had our live show where we were talking some Brazilian action over down there in Serie A, and I got the Venezuela-Mexico game on right now, but ready to talk some Euros. Had a nice little afternoon here, so.
Sidebar, while Nick's not here, did you guys see that Lazio is going after Mason Greenwood?
I did. Yeah, perfect fit for that club.
It does kind of fit.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. That's nice for Nick. I'm sure he'll grab a Greenwood jersey. That's nice.
Oh, man. So it's great having you guys on with or without Nick. If he comes on, I'm sure we'll keep ragging on him. But the Euros so far has been a bit wild, right? Because when you go through the groups, I'll just run them down quick for everybody. You know, Group A kind of played out the way many people expected. Germany, Swiss as the first two in that group. Spain, Italy in Group B, you know, kind of what people expected. But then you start going through some of the others. Once you get past that England group, and even though England won the group, it was very lackluster from them with a win and two draws. Group D, Austria winning a group with France and the Dutch. Romania winning a group with Belgium. Georgia getting through as a third-place team along with Turkey in second out of Group F. The Czechs in last place there, very unexpected in my opinion. And then third-place teams that end up getting through, the Dutch, Georgia, Slovakia with 4 points, and Slovenia, the best team, with 3 points. So, I mean, from a betting angle, guys, this has been pretty tough to handicap so far with some of these results. Like, I know one of the matches today, we went 3 for 4, which has been really good for us because it's been very unexpected. Portugal minus 1.5 against Georgia was the one we lost, and they ended up losing. You could have taken Georgia minus 1.5 and made a fortune on them because they dismantled Portugal. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look, with these different groups and everything, you got to remember tournament football is really different. You have to handicap these game to game. It's really tough taking futures positions. And that's why I didn't get super involved with a ton of like group futures. I will say I was a little disappointed by Hungary. I thought I expected a little better performance out of them. I also expected a little bit better of a performance out of Croatia. I'm not surprised at all that England sucks. England is a betting favorite strictly because England has the highest handle. They've been betting forever. They are a major presence in the market. They weren't the odds-on favorite to win this cup, in my opinion. I think everybody thought it was France, and you were getting a little bit better number on France. That said, Austria is playing absolutely phenomenal football. I called it game one. I said Baumgartner was going to be a stud and a major important piece for this Austria team. And it turns out he is. And you know, Arnautovic is playing better as the tournament progresses. Memphis Depay, get off the pitch, bro. You're a waste of space. You're just sucking up everybody else's oxygen and wearing a headband. And I'm surprised you haven't dropped a new rap album to promote along with these absolutely garbage performances.
No, he usually scores if he's dropping an album. That's what.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I would be much more comfortable. So I took Depay over 1.5 goals for the entire tournament. He's on one. I need him to bag another one here in the knockout rounds. But I think Romania is clearly the sleeper team that everybody forgot about. They play a really gritty style of football. They're defensively sound, even though they have a 31-year-old left back who did get carded the other day. But I think Belgium just proves that they need to start leaving the old heads at home, or yeah. Like, it's time to take Lukaku out and bench him or fire a manager, get somebody with the stones to play your youth. Like, Openda needs run, Luka Bacchiao needs run, Bakayoko needs run. Tillemans, like, all these young guys for Belgium are absolute studs. You need some good center back play, so you know, start developing some center backs somewhere out there. Feyenoord, any of the teams in the Dutch Eredivisie, but like, yeah, figure that out. But mad props to Georgia. They played a fantastic game. And Metsaduke, being top goal scorer at like 5 or 6 to 1, I think Leg and I gave out pre-Euros, was a nice little hit there. So a couple of frustrating groups, especially Group B. You scored way too many damn goals. Like, I had that being the lowest scoring group, because I thought England would have finally put it together against somebody. But yeah, Group B, scoring way too many damn goals.
My only complaint is that Serbia's not taking any crap for how bad they did in this tournament. You scored one goal. You had Vlahovic, Mitrovic, Tadic, Ilic, all serving it up there. You scored one goal. Luka Jovic was your top goal scorer. So, embarrassment to Serbia.
Guy can't even start in Italy, bro.
Yeah, Nick will tell you if he was here that, you know, he's giving Serbia crap because he loves to give them crap, because they, for the World Cup and then this tournament, were kind of like a team that a lot of people were on. I thought they were going to perform a lot better. They have a lot of, you know, talented players that play in big leagues. I was shocked to see Milinkovic-Savic coming off the bench. I know he's in Saudi Arabia now, but, you know, in Serie A, he was a beast just up to last year. So I was really surprised to see him as a bench player for them. But, yeah, I think you're right about Belgium. Like, it's time to maybe start to turn that group over. You know, there's guys that have to make their way out. I think the same is now seen for Croatia. But, you know, a small nation, it's hard to turn over very quickly a country like that with 3 million people or so. And Romania, you know, going in, when we did our preview episode with Martino, Nick, and I, like, I thought Romania was going to be one of the weaker teams in the tournament because outside of Dragusin, who I recognize for playing on Genoa and then going to Spurs, like, I don't know anybody on that team really from a major European league, which is crazy. And they performed very well.
Serie B guys. So, like, yeah. Parma just got promoted. You got Man. You got a couple of guys there. But, yeah, I mean, Roma was a nice – that was the tightest group. I mean, that was – everybody was on 3 points today. Both games ended in a draw. And they scored a lot of goals. So, it was a very impressive group.
Yeah, and who's the other one? I was going to say Georgia. I thought by for sure going to be the weakest team in this tournament. You know, Carvajalia obviously has been very impactful for Napoli for 2 seasons. But who else is there? And then it was – the keeper, who I'm going to butcher his name, like Marvin Vasili or whatever his name is from Valencia, we had the Czechs in that second match, and the Czechs completely overran them. You look at the numbers, like, they should have won that match by like 5 goals, and his goals prevented on like the advanced metrics was like 3 goals or something, and that right there was I think the turning point for them to find a way out of it, and then to do what they did to Portugal today, very impressive. I know the Portuguese had less onus to win that match, but still very impressive when it comes to talent that you're matching up with a side like Portugal. And it kind of puts in the, you know, the back of your mind some of these teams that we talked about as potential sleepers, because you mentioned England betting favorite, even though they're not the best team in this tournament, even going in. Like, we knew that. We talked about that.
Softer side of the bracket now, though. Yeah.
Yep. We'll get into the bracket in a minute, because it is broken in a very interesting way with the results. Like, you know, France on paper was the best team coming in, haven't played like it. And then, you know, some of the other teams we mentioned were like Germany being the home side, Spain, Portugal. It's really, I guess, been Spain and Germany have been the more impressive of the bigger sides that were in the top 5-6 favorites for this tournament heading in.
Go ahead.
Let me just say really quick, I want to bring up Portugal because I got Scotty here. Scotty, no bias at all. Cristiano Ronaldo starting up front for Portugal, and then you see Diogo Jota come in for him. Who are you starting in the knockout match?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I got to rep my boy Jota. I mean, he's just got that ability, that unteachable, you know, knack for finding the goal. Like, coming from like a Liverpool side that was so wasteful in front, you know, all season long, having Jota come in and be reliable, I think he's a, you know, as good of a, you know, finisher right now in the Euros that we have. I mean, we've seen plenty of wasteful chances. I should say maybe own goal. That's probably the best finisher we have in the Euros right now. But outside of that, maybe it's Jota.
I'm just a little nervous after watching that Georgia game. I like calling it Georgia, but Nick got very upset when I said that. And I was like, we're in America. You get confused if you say Georgia all the time.
Yeah.
Let me think. I'm talking about football.
I saw a great tweet. It was like Portugal just found out that it means more in the SEC or something like that. It gave me a good jungle.
Yeah.
I will say I'm not surprised at all by Germany. I told you, or I told everybody, the second Toni Kroos announced his retirement, I'm like, Germany's winning the Euros. And Toni Kroos, 18-1 player of the tournament, book it. It's Toni Kroos's last ride. He just won the UCL. He's one of the most German, most decorated Germans playing the game. He's going out on top of his career. He had two hockey assists in that first game. Look, it's Toni Kroos's last ride. It's in Germany. It's at home. The storybook, the script writes itself. And the odds were a little shorter than I wanted. I'm not going to lie. I thought 550 was kind of a ripoff. I thought I should have been getting like 7-1 or 8-1. But I wasn't going to complain. You tell me it's Toni Kroos's last ride. I'm throwing my unit down on it just to make the contact. Because now we're at the point where even if that ticket loses, you can make money hedging out of it. And I get the benefit of I can make content as far as Germany can go now.
Yeah, and being the home side, they do have that advantage, right? They have the crowds, and they're playing fairly well. I mean, the Swiss gave them that tough match, but overall, one of the better sides so far, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, they've held their own. I think, you know, when you looked at the Euros coming into it, they're probably one of the four teams that you circled as like, yeah, these are probably the four countries that can win it, you know, not really expecting anybody else to come up. But, you know, only them, like we said, only them and Spain have really kind of risen to the occasion so far. I think Spain, weirdly for me, has kind of gone under the radar because not only are they undefeated, they haven't conceded a goal yet, albeit against, you know, Italy and Croatia and Albania, not exactly the most, you know, attacking-minded teams. But to be basically perfect so far through three matches is quite a testament to what they've been able to achieve so far.
Yeah, I was already seeing the price out there, win to nil, though. It is a not beautiful number at like -135. People know that they're just holding it down back there.
Yeah, against Georgia, I'm sure the lines in that match, I haven't looked yet at that match in particular, but I'm sure the betting lines are going to be very hard to find anything very nice to bet on it because it's going to be so slanted. But yeah, Spain, you're right, Scotty. They were very impressive. I mean, against Italy, that was the one match I watched of theirs, obviously. And Italy didn't sniff the goal. They didn't sniff it. And not that Italy, like you said, is the most prolific attacking national team right now, but I expect a little bit better than what they did. I didn't expect them to win the match. I didn't even really expect a result out of it, but I think they had one shot in the match on target or something. It was, you know, Spain is locking it down. They're back to that possession football, and Nico Williams.
They're
and
really
Yamal.
Not, though. They're playing fast. Like,
yeah.
Listen, last Euros, I would 100% agree with you. They had like 1,200, 1,300 passes a game. The ball moved nothing but laterally. You would get a line-breaking pass, and then instead of crossing, they'd back it out. The Spain team actually has a set of stones on them now and is finishing chances and going for goal. And I think part of it is Nico Williams playing left wing because he's just smoking people down there. And I just wanted to say, I know me and Leg went over it earlier, but Barca fans and Arsenal fans, you're delusional if you think you're pulling Nico Williams away from Bilbao. Just letting you know right now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a different Spain in the way they go about it, right? I think Croatia might have even won the possession battle in their match. When I was watching the Italy match, I actually double-checked, and I was only 57-43 the possession. It felt a lot worse because of Italy not doing
because of their good chances.
The yeah.
Because everything that Spain did that got into the box, you're like, holy crap, that's a dangerous chance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Giovanni Di Lorenzo is still having nightmares about Nico Williams a week later. Like, he just torched him the whole match. He's very impressive. Yamal, you know, on the other side, you're playing so fast, it makes them hard to defend. But, and then, you know, to me with Spain, Morata's never been like that guy that you're like, oh, watch out, like it's Morata, right? Like, he gets
he's
his
Lukaku.
Goals.
That but... might be insulting to Morata, but he's Lukaku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's move into the bracket because all these results we talked about really have made for an interesting bracket. Going on the one side of the bracket, which is now pretty loaded, it's Spain playing Georgia, Germany playing Denmark. Those winners will meet in the quarterfinals. France playing Belgium, Portugal against Slovenia. Those winners meet in the quarterfinals on the same side of the bracket. So you're going to only get one of Spain, Germany, France, Belgium, Portugal with a shot at the final. And then the opposite side of the bracket, you have Romania against the Dutch, Austria against Turkey. Those two winners meet in the quarters, and then it's England against Slovakia and the Swiss against Italy on the opposite side. So, like, if you are like me as an Italian fan, I'm not that impressed right now. I just tend to be optimistic because I'm a fan of the team. But when you see the way the bracket broke, I went from being like, all right, like quarterfinals is an accomplishment, I think, with this team, to now, you know, if they get by the Swiss, is England that good? Are the Dutch or one of those teams that good? Like, the path to the final opens up for some of those teams
can
on that
you
side.
Score a goal?
Well, that's, yeah, that's the thing, right? But, you know, what I'm saying is, like,
you gotta score one to advance, you know? Like,
yeah.
The thing is, like, do you really want to go to penalty kicks twice?
No. But conversely, if they were on the opposite of the bracket, I'm like, they're done after maybe one knockout game. You know, like, these fans, if you're a Belgian fan, like, you have to be, like, infuriated that you couldn't get the win today to avoid playing France. Like, you'd be in that spot where Romania is, and, you know, there's a lot better options out there. So, like, looking at
Belgium
it.
Belgium did not play the Netherlands. They did not want that smoke. Belgium was damned if they did, damned if they didn't. Like, they're just happy to make it out of groups because they didn't make it out of groups in the World Cup. Like, as far as Belgium's concerned, they progressed, and that's embarrassing with the amount of talent they have. But if anybody is talking high on Belgium, like, oh, we should have topped that group so we could have played Netherlands. Bro, I would have taken Netherlands to, like, minus 160 against Belgium. Are you kidding me?
So you're not buying any shot of Belgium getting by France, even with France playing as
poorly
as they are.
Dude, I don't know. Is Lukaku going to put six more shots on target and get none of them in the back of the net? Like, look, are we doing here? Like, the only guy who showed me anything on Belgium is Luka Bacchio and Yuri Tillemans from midfield jacking for chicks in the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the lines, like, in the head-to-heads coming up in the knockout rounds. You know, Swiss, Italy, pretty even, plus 230, plus 150. Germany, minus 160. The Danes at plus 475 is a big number on them. England, minus 250. Slovakia, plus 800 in that one. Spain's minus 500 on the money line against Georgia at plus 1400, which we kind of expected. France, Belgium, minus 110 to plus 350. So not much love for Belgium from the books there. Portugal, minus 245. Slovenia, plus 650. The Dutch are minus 235 against the Romanians, who are plus 700. And Austria, minus 115 against Turkey, who's plus 330. So anything jump out at you there in terms of, like, these round of 16 matchups in terms of just strict money line?
Why is England minus 250?
What'd you say?
What has England done? Period. What has England done?
Yeah, I mean, you can get Slovakia at plus 900. Might be worth a little sprinkle. I think that Romania is getting mad disrespected here. I think that Romania on a double chance is very live. I could see them. If not, I don't necessarily see them winning the game, but I can see them dragging that to extra time. Because if I have to watch Memphis Depay fail to find the back of the net again or even get a boot on a ball to control a pass, I'm going to lose it. Gakpo is their by far best player out there, and he won't shoot the – he's passing way too much. Like, somebody needs to sit Gakpo down and go, listen, bro, Memphis didn't drop a new album, and the headband doesn't mean you got to get him the ball. Like, just shoot it. He had the ball on his foot in the six-yard box at the end of the game to get a game winner, and he wouldn't pull the trigger. He backed it out and he tried to make a good pass in a dangerous area, but nobody's home. So, like, what do you want? I don't know. I think that I like the Netherlands too, because, like, I like Denzel Dumfries when he puts on that Netherlands kit. It's like putting on a Superman cape. And the fact that we didn't see Dumfries or Frempong in game three, and we saw Huzits out there, whose name I don't even know and don't even care to know, because you're playing behind two of the best right backs I can think of that play that style of forward attacking kind of wing backs stuff. Like, I watched Denzel Dumfries have three assists in a game. So I'm wondering where he's at. Frempong did his job in game two. He looked like an absolute stud playing up there at left wing. So unless Netherlands figures out how to manage their lineup and come out aggressive here, Romania can put eight dudes behind the ball, body you up and make it really tough to pass, and then they can beat you in transition.
Yeah, and if you think they keep it close, I mean, right now on the spread, they're plus a goal and a quarter at minus 140.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely – it's not that I don't like that. Let me see what they – like, because I could see – I just – I kind of like this game to go to extra time, just to go to extra time. So, like, if you want to take a draw here, I could definitely get behind a draw at, like, plus 375. But, you know, again, like, I might take Romania on the draw no bet – or not draw no bet, sorry, on the double chance. Because you're getting plus 188 on that. And you never know. I mean, it's not like Netherlands is rock solid in the back. Austria hung three on them.
Yeah. Poland scored, and they didn't do much this tournament, right?
Yeah. I think
– yeah, with Buska, too. Former New England Revs guy that played for, like, Nantes. I don't even know where he plays anymore. With the Swiderski and the Lewandowski injury. So, yeah, they coughed one up to Adam Buska, who is a washed-out MLS player.
So, Coach, I want to – speaking of teams that could draw, I think the line that weirdly stuck out for me in this one is just how, like, short the odds are for the draw line for Switzerland and Italy. Like, we usually talk that that's around plus 250 to plus 350, but here it is at plus 195. I mean, how do you feel about the, you know, potential Italy-Switzerland match going to extra time and maybe even penalties? Because it seems like, I mean, I everything see you it. See this, yeah. it's either going to be a 0-0, or if one team does get a goal, like, you know, it's probably likely that there's going to be an equalizer in stoppage time, just the way that Italy's been playing.
This feels like one of those matches that if someone's going to win it in regular time, it's going to be like a 1-0 type win.
Yeah.
Or maybe they get a second because the other team has to push up late and they get caught out in possession or something like that on the counterattack. Because these two teams played in World Cup qualifying. Swiss won the group, but both their head-to-heads were draws. And they kind of match up that way, it feels like, again. Italy, position for position, there's some better players here and there. The Swiss have a couple guys that, like, turn up for Switzerland, like Granit Xhaka turns up for them, right? And I'm curious to see how the Italian midfield combats him, because I'm still, like, at this point in his career, I'm not convinced by Jorginho starting in the center of the park and having to dictate play. Like, against Spain, he was a pedestrian. Like, you could have given him, like, a folding chair and sat in the middle of the park, and he would have looked the same, pretty much. Like, Spalletti yelled at him in the match, like, if you're going he's to be ass. Out there, like, you need, like, to do something, basically.
Ass. Yeah. I'm sorry, Arsenal fans, but he's terrible.
Like, you know, this is not the Jorginho of 4 years ago or 3 years ago when they won the tournament and he was dictating even that play. Good
4 years ago, yeah, when no, they won the tournament. Yeah. He choked a penalty kick.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. He's a specialist at.
Which, yeah, prior to that, he was a specialist. And then he missed penalty kicks, I think, in both qualifiers against Switzerland that really cost Italy the World Cup qualification. So we could talk about him and penalty kicks, because that is, yeah, certainly a place that he no longer excels at and cost Italy multiple times. So I'm curious to see with that match, like, Italy switched to the 3-5-2 last match. I think they have to stick with it because it provided solidity around the pitch. They possessed the ball more. Obviously, against Spain, they were going to get overrun, I thought, regardless. But I'm glad Spalletti moved away from the 4-3-3. Their thing, when I was on the Calcio Guys with Nick last night, like, we were talking about what do they need to do. They need to find, like, if you're playing 3-5-2, is it Retegui and Raspadori again? I didn't think Raspadori is that – I don't think he's that good. Do you try, like, Scamacca and Retegui together? Like, where are the goals coming from? Because Scamacca was great for Atalanta down the stretch. He is a big reason why they won the Europa League. He's got a lot of skill. You know, the hold-up play from him was pretty good the first match, but you need the goal from him, which is what he's out there for. Retegui had flashes in the first half, but didn't do a lot. And then if you're playing 3-5-2, Chiesa doesn't really fit there. So I think they've got some decisions to make. They've got to replace Calafiori, who's suspended. Which I think they can do that. I think Buongiorno or Mancini can slide in and they'll be okay against a Swiss side that's not, like, super intimidating from an attacking perspective. But I could see why the draw line is the lowest in the knockout round, because I can see this being a 0-0, 1-1 type match and going to extra time.
Do you want me to keep it a buck with you, or you want me to lie to you and ride on Italy's jock a little bit?
I want your honest opinion, because I always like to hear other people's perspective, because, you know, when it's your team, sometimes you look at it through a different perspective, and hearing it from someone who's has no, like, rooting loyalty in the game would be good.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mbolo causes you guys problems. He's a big body guy. Ndoye has been playing extremely well this game, or this tournament. You know, like you mentioned, Xhaka is playing well, but, you know, he's a midfielder. The thing is, like, you got to get something out of your forward. And, like, I know that it's in vogue to shit on Samacha, but Samacha told you he's good for 20 goals a year if you give him the minutes. Atalanta gave him, like, no minutes the first 12, 15 games, and he still got you fucking 20 goals, dude. Like, this guy, he's a monster. I picked West Ham to finish top four when he got traded there. That obviously blew up right in my face because West Ham is terribly managed and they continue to run Antonio out there for no reason other than they just are used to seeing Antonio out there. But, like, Samaka's your guy. So you either ride with him or figure it out. You should have figured it out before Euros if you're not going to ride with him, because you can't. This deep into Euros, you can't be playing with your formation. You can't be having these debates over who's going to start. And you can't be talking about, well, I would like a draw for two rounds straight and hope to win it on penalty kicks. Like, you're reigning Euros champs. Get your shit together and play good football.
And it has to be said, Donnarumma's a big reason why they were able to get through, because he's standing on his head again. He's standing on his head again.
Because he's standing on his head.
Him and Bastoni have been really good, and that's about the only guys you can really say have been really good for them, I think.
Not going to give any credit to Calafiori?
He's been good, but I think as much as I like him as a prospect, like all the memes, because he's got the Maldini-like hair and like the headband, like the aura bullshit.
Wait, that was a Maldini?
Because he's got like the same look. So like all that bullshit has to stop. Like all these like fan, like the kid is good. Look, I'm a Roma fan. Looking at him now, I'm like, they gave up on him way too soon. Mourinho let him go way too soon, whatever. But he was playing left back at Roma, didn't fit. Now look, Thiago Motta had the vision to turn him into a center back, and he's excelling. I don't think that happens at Roma, so it's probably better for him that he did leave. But, you know, he had the own goal in the Spain game, which was the only goal they gave up thanks to Donnarumma standing on his head. And, you know, he had a moment, I think, on the Modric goal where he was one of the two that turned off. I think it was him and Di Lorenzo that were in the area over there that kind of turned off after Donnarumma made the save that he put the rebound in on. So he made a great run to set up Zaccagni's goal, and I gave him a lot of credit for that. But he's not on the level of Bastoni right now. Without Bastoni, that back line is not as good as it has been.
I just really want to see Switzerland lose too, which is what I feel like pushes me more towards Italy on the draw, no better, Italy for the money line. This is just kind of a legacy game tradition here. Euro champs, defending champs. I think they can get out of the first round.
I don't know, man. Like, here's the one thing Switzerland does have is, like, Italy's been bad at giving up
free kicks. You can't both be the defensive team, though. You know what I mean? Like,
right. if you can't give up free kicks against Switzerland because you have Shaqiri who can come on, and we know that, like, it literally only takes one strike of the ball from Shaqiri, and that shit's in the back of the net, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Hold on. When's the last time you saw that happen?
I saw it happen in the World Cup.
Okay.
That near post one that he slammed in.
All right, so a year ago, you saw him hit this one shot in. That's what we're banking that off of.
Year and a half ago, yeah, because thanks to Winter World Cup.
Oh, yeah, Winter World Cup, I forgot.
And Italy, historically, like, they ran through the group stage at the last Euros when they won it. And mainly, I think, because they were in Rome for all three matches.
You also had a group with Northern Macedonia in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they beat Turkey, Wales, and I think Northern the Swiss. And was it the Swiss that were in the group with them?
Northern Mass.
I thought that was qualification. But anyway, like, Italy, historically, prior to that tournament, has been, like, a slow-starting team. I'm wondering if, like, maybe that Zaccagni goal is, like, the wake-up call for them and gets them going a little bit. Because to me, like, if they get by Switzerland, I don't fear England right now as an Italian fan. Like, England's still better on paper, but they're not, like, unbeatable. Like, if we run into Spain again, you're going to feel really bad about it, right? But, like, England playing the way they are. I mean, let's talk about England for a minute. I see people tweeting, like, only Gareth Southgate could, like, have the German, you know, Golden Boot winner, Spanish player, like league player of the year in Bellingham, and whoever won it in England, like
Foden.
Like, yeah, Foden, and like he can't figure it out offensively. Like, I like what is it with his tactics or with the way he's running the players out there? Like, what is it with them? Like, Scotty, you watch Premier League all the time too. Like, what do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talk about it, but he fails to get the best players on the pitch. Like, he has his favorites that he usually tries to just shoehorn in, and it usually kind of leaves, you know, a disjointed type of, you know, possession-based game. And so you can see a lot of times we watch England, like, they're more concerned about not conceding and not messing up than they are about actually trying to, you know, take chances or take risks, put the ball down wide and get it into the, you know, cross it in. And you have a guy like Harry Kane who's, you know, a pretty solid finisher in the box from, you know, any sort of delivery you can give him, but they just don't seem to be taking that many risks, and Harry Kane keeps dropping really deep. Like, I think when Harry Kane was really successful in the Premier League, he was playing off of another striker or pseudo striker in Son, but they're kind of flanking him with Saka, who's been, I think, really disappointing in this tournament so far. Foden, who's not really a true winger. He's more plays like a 10 slash second 10 for City. And so he just feels very isolated. And so, like, you know, when I watch the match, when someone like Ollie Watkins comes in, it's like, yeah, this is the guy that you should try pairing with Harry Kane to try to get a little, you know, interaction between those two forwards getting, you know, up the pitch.
Oh, you mean that way if Harry Kane drops with the Spanish head coach?
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing about Ollie Watkins. Like, I love that it's like, yo, we have to play this formation because we have these guys that play all – like, why not play with the two strikers? You have the guy that contributed the most goals in the Premier League. This isn't even about just him actually getting you the goals. Like, he's there to set shit up. He can play with his back to the net, adding more to that. And then you'd have Bellingham running at him, Saka running at him, Foden running at him, or Palmer running at him, like Eze running at him. Like, just put two targets for them to work with. I don't know. It seems like it's not that hard to just adjust a little bit. No, but yeah. Southgate is just...
he refuses to.
Old school, like, very boring brand of English football.
If you want to know the problem with England, watch the first 2 minutes of their first match. Saka has the ball. Bellingham breaks the line, and he's calling for it to be played in at his feet twice in the first 2 minutes. Both of the times he backs it out to Kyle Walker. The second I saw that, I turned the game off and I go, this is going to be unwatchable. And England hasn't disappointed. They've continued to be unwatchable the rest of the way. They have no stones on them. They have no will to attack. They're perfectly content. Jose Mourinho said, you can take your ball and go home. I'll take the 3 points. Give me one goal. You can have 85% of possession. So... again, like, what's important to you? Do you want to possess the ball or do you want to win the damn game? Because put Nagelsmann at coach for England and you're winning games 5-2. You're running people's pockets.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, God forbid.
England don't have stones, all right? England definitely stones is on them.
John Stones does play over there, so.
I think the real tragedy here would be is if England gets past Slovakia and Italy get past Switzerland, you're going to have an England versus Italy game that's going to be about as unwatchable as anything that you're going to see in a quarterfinals of a Euros tournament. Like, it's going to be painful to watch that game.
It's going to be like the old Catenaccio of the, like, 90s Italy teams. Like, we're just, like, defend, try to get one goal and get through kind of stuff, right? Like, because even England scored first in the game against Denmark. I think that was the game Kane scored. And, like, I'm listening to it on Sirius on my way home before the Italy match, and I'm like, they're just saying, like, England has completely, like, turned off. Like, they got the one goal and turned off. And then it bit them in the ass, which is to be expected when you score that early and you turn off against a team that can score. And it's like, go for the jugular at that point, right? You get the goal, you get the momentum, like, and they don't do that. And that's surprising because you have all these Premier League teams and all these players from the Premier League, and the Premier League is so hyped up all the time. And
overhyped,
for sure. And which is why... I mean, outside of City, and they didn't do it this year. They did it last year, finally. In Europe, like, these teams don't always do as well as people expect the club teams to do as well, right?
Zero English teams in European finals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, interesting there with England. We mentioned Germany. I mean, Spain, Georgia, we mentioned it. And let's go to France. Like, what's going on with France? Nick will claim it's his fault because he had the future on France and the future on Mbappe, Golden Boot, I believe it was, or Player of the Tournament, whatever he took. And they just, I mean, shocking from them really so far.
This is all France's fault. And Leg will tell you why. It's all France's fault.
France money line. Belgium France is trash. I don't know France what any is... from them, but give me France money line. I know that there's more
minus 110, easy.
Yeah. Minus 110, minus 115 were the two numbers.
Belgium's not doing nothing against this team.
The fact that you can get an Mbappe win cast ever for any game when Mbappe is going to be starting on the pitch with a plus number, I always will think is solid. Because he plays with two pretty impressive clubs internationally and, you know, in Europe. So, give me a plus.
Start Kamavinga and win games, France. It's really that easy. Just start Tuch and Kamavinga. Take all the Madrid boys, put them on the pitch, and then go win the tournament. It's not that hard.
Yeah, part of me wonders if they, you know, do the business against Belgium. Does this, like, get them going and they turn it on and do what people expect from them? Or is it going to be more of the same where maybe against Portugal it's a little bit more of a struggle than, you know, and, you know, it's a tough path for them now. They've set themselves up for a tough path where if they had won the group, they're on that other side of the bracket with England and those teams. They're going to have to play either.
I think that they're much preferring to play Belgium here. Like, Belgium, this midfield and back line for Belgium's trash. Like, and I don't particularly rate Griezmann because, one, Atleti's full of nothing but scumbags. And two, like, I just don't really rate Griezmann that highly. He does hit nice penalty kicks for France, but, like, other than that, he sucks. And Dembele sucks out loud, and I don't know why he's still on the pitch most of the time. And again, like, you're not starting Kamavinga. What's wrong with you? Like, there's things France can do here to be better. Whether or not they do them is up to them. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm not worried about France. Again, it's a team we all know starts slow and is going to be a tough out because they can deliver a 0-0 on any given day if they want to. You can just take a couple of those guys who I said were not playing well and floundering, and you can put on a bunch of defensive talent and build a wall back there, and nobody's going to score a goal on you.
I think you're really, like, you're spot on, though, because if they don't turn it on here, like, this is when you make the championship run. If you actually want to win the Euro, this is when you turn it on. And I think they either turn it on and they're going to punch Belgium in the mouth when you look at that back line. And Castells, you know, he had a good, solid year, but is he going to be able to handle Mbappe with the Batman mask on? Is he going to be able to handle Dembele if he finally figures out if he's using his right or left foot as his dominant foot? Maybe Griezmann will get a penalty, like Oak said. On the flip side, besides taking KDB shots on target, I'm not confident in anything with Belgium and anything they've done. Lukaku, if you're a Lukaku fan, all you can really say is he's due.
He is due. Yeah, by statistics, he is due.
He's getting plenty of shots on target. He's been multiple shots on target every match. He's just not putting it in, right?
Well, he has been putting it in. The bar's bitten him a couple times. He's found the back of the net.
But, yeah, nothing makes me confident in Belgium, though. I
watched him against Ukraine today. Ukraine was the better team.
Yeah, France money line at minus 110 is certainly attractive in that matchup based on the way that, you know, Belgium's played, like you said. And I'm looking at the futures now, and the futures have moved now after the group stage. And England's the favorite still, according to the lines here on DraftKings, plus 350. Spain plus 450. Germany plus 550. France has moved into fourth in the betting numbers at plus 600. So they've gotten a bump of about, I think, about another plus 250 from where they were to open tournament. I think they were on the 350 mark. And then it's Portugal plus 700. Everybody else after that is plus 1,200 or more, with Netherlands, Italy, Austria as rounding out the top eight. So, I mean, I know you said futures are tough, especially in a tournament like this. Does France become more attractive at plus 600, or is there something else that jumps out at you in terms of, like, betting futures? Obviously, England, I think, has very little value there, plus 350.
Yeah, I mean, look, I work with BetUS. My guy Flash was dead nuts on. He took Spain pre-tournament, and I wasn't convinced by what I had seen out of Spain, and now he's sitting in a great position. I do have just I have a little sprinkle on Netherlands because I don't know. I think Fanatics was running some sort of boost where I got them at like 20-1. So I do have a little sprinkle on them, but I'm very content holding my Germany ticket. And their price hasn't moved around. So again, I think from what we've seen, it's Germany's tournament to lose. And I would just really hate to be on the railroad tracks in front of the Tony Kroos farewell ride off into the sunset tour, because that seems like a terrible end of a bargain to be on. If I'm anybody on the whole planet who has watched Tony Kroos, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about Tony Kroos. He's one of the 10 best midfielders to ever lace his boots. So, and if you don't feel that way, I'm going to probably go ahead and tell you, you watch nothing but English football. And that's the God's honest truth. Cause if you don't think Tony Kroos is one of the best to ever play the game, all you do is watch EPL.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, because as well as Germany's played, is Kai Havertz the right guy to be starting up top? Like if you run into Spain in the next round, because that's the likely matchup in the quarters, like, when is their the time to maybe look at Fulkrug, right? Is Fulkrug the guy maybe you give a look? He's got a couple of goals off the bench, more of a striker than Havertz. Like, is that maybe the move they have to go to? And
he probably shouldn't have tried to fight Rudiger.
You have to play the hot boot when you're Germany. You have way too many good players. Like, you have Florian Wirtz. We're looking at Musiala, Gundogan, Tony Kroos. Too many playmakers where we're playing a guy like, all right, well, maybe this game you'll finally get one. Where you have another guy that's coming in off the bench and still hitting them in. I don't know. I'd play the hot boot if I'm Germany because, again, you can just sub Kai Havertz in. It's another guy that
I improved. Sure. And he's going to have fresh legs, like a fresh legs Kai Havertz in the 70th minute with Tony Kroos putting in balls over the top. That's a deadly combo. Again, but, you know, look, in Nagelsmann, I trust. I hate to say it, but, like, there's no way he should have lost that Bayern job. I know it was due to some locker room and to some off-the-field issues with board members that they have since fired. But the fact that you got rid of Nagelsmann when he lost 5 games, he had you in the DFP Pokal, he had you in Champions League, and he was top of the league when you fired him to get Tuchel to come in and bring you no hardware for the first time in over a decade for Bayern, that's pathetic. And the fact that Nagelsmann has this Germany job and has this German team absolutely humming is beautiful.
Yeah, to me, that's the big question mark is that position right now, the number 9. Like, do you just go there? And I agree. I think you go with the hot boot, especially if Havertz maybe does start this next one and doesn't score again. I think maybe it's time to move away and give Fulkrug a look.
But when you score 3 a game, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares who your 9 is when you're putting up 3 a game? You're getting one out of Musiala damn near every game. You know, you got a ton of depth out there. You got Gundogan in the middle, who is a Barcelona player, but he's the only Barcelona player with any spine in that damn locker room. He was the one who told him it's not okay to get absolutely clapped at the fake Camp Nou in Champions League. He's the one that told Xavi, decide whether or not you're going to be here or not. Like, he's the only one with the spine on that Barcelona team. So, like, I got to have a little respect for him.
Yeah. What else jumps? Anything else jump out in like the matchups or the potential matchups that come up in this bracket? I think Germany Spain would be a very intriguing one. Like we said, those two teams playing very well. Other than that, like, is there anything else that jumps out at you in that potential quarters, or maybe do we have to look further ahead to get like a juicy matchup? Do you think?
I mean, I'll give you my final four prediction, and then we'll kind of That's kind of got to be it for me. It's 10:05. We've been working pretty hard here. But I think France comes out of the bottom of the bracket. I think Germany comes out of the top. I think Germany plays Spain in probably the best match of the Euros that we'll see. I think Netherlands ends up rematching with Austria, which is going to be an absolute banger because Austria clearly has figured out how to find the weak spots in this Netherlands team. Again, unless you have to make wholesale changes there. I know the Netherlands were secured going through, and they didn't put out their best, strongest lineup versus Austria. But I think that's a very good match to watch there. I do like Netherlands to make it to the semis. And I'll be honest with you, I don't care. If Italy plays England, I'm going to bet the under, and then I'm going to go back to doing chores. We'll maybe see five shots in regulation. And that's not a side. That's total for the game. I would rather watch paint dry or my grass grow than that. And again, I think Germany wins it all.
Yeah. I think the winner of Spain and Germany is probably going to be the team that takes it. I think Spain will give Germany a run for their money. Like, again, the defense speaks for itself. So I think whoever comes out of that match in the quarterfinals is probably going to be the eventual champion.
I think Spain struggles a little bit with depth. At least that's what me and Leg were talking about pre-tournament.
Yeah, they weren't overly impressive 1-0 win when they did heavily rotate, which speaks a little bit, I guess, to the depth. When they played Albania, didn't pour it on like you maybe would have expected if that was like the first match of the group, right? Where
at least they won.
Their main guys. Yeah, they won.
You know,
nobody else won.
Portugal
all three matches,
tried to rotate,
right?
And they got spanked 2-0 in Georgia.
I think whoever wins that quarterfinal matchup, I agree, has got to be become the favorite for the tournament, unless France really finds themselves heading into like a semifinal against one of those sides. And then whoever gets out the other side of the bracket is going to be, I think, a big underdog against any of those sides. You know, betting numbers maybe not for England if England gets there, because the public's going to bet them down probably a bit. Like you mentioned, they've got a big following earlier on, Oaks.
I like taking a shot on Austria, to be honest with you, at 18-1.
I was going to ask if to make the final at +700 is like worth a shot with the way they've played.
Yeah, for sure. If not Austria, then Netherlands. Like those would be my two long shot picks here. Even if you want to just take them to make the final, for me, I think it's better to take the future to win, because I think you'll end up getting a better hedge number at the end than you will just taking them to make the final. I think you can probably make, and people don't always like to hear that, because yeah, you sometimes have to eat a minus like 185 to advance or to lift the trophy line. But you should never have a problem coming up with money for a hedge, because you can just go to the sports book and ask for a loan. The ticket itself is collateral. So you can always find the money to hedge out, and hedges is almost always better than cashing out or taking the shorter odds prop of just to make the final. So save yourself some money. Don't worry about coming up with the funds for a hedge, because a sports book will loan you the cash with no interest or no points on it, because your ticket itself is the collateral.
Yeah, that's a different way to look at it. And I was just thinking about futures back to our preview episode, and we were talking about some of, and I didn't take any of them, but we discussed like the straight forecast to predict the final. And it was like, well, if you like France is probably gonna be on the other side of the bracket from Spain,
yeah,
Germany,
and
Portugal.
Got completely screwed up.
It got so screwed up.
Who was trying to mind read brackets and read groups.
Because you expected France to be on the opposite side of the bracket winning that group. And you were like, okay, if you love France to win this tournament, take France and potentially Portugal or Germany or Spain, whichever one you like the best, or two of the ones you like the best, and you're going to make some money. And now they're all on the same side of the bracket. So those are all shot, unless you took like England, France or something. So very interesting the way that played out. I just thought of that as we were talking about, you know, playing out the bracket. So, yeah. So we'll let you guys go, because I know you guys have been going for a while. You had your own show earlier. But before we let you go, tell everybody where they can find you. I know you've been doing live casts like almost every day, and maybe people want to tune into those when you guys are doing those. So let us know where to find it.
Like, you want to do the outro?
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter at TwoFootTalk, at TWOFootTalk. Make sure you go and look at the Golden Booty futures also. The highest one right now, or I mean the lowest one, is +650. And three is
everybody's tied. Yeah, like everybody's on two or three goals most.
Yeah, so at TwoFootTalk. You're going to see all the ridiculous random parlays out of Young Leg. at Burr Oaks, at Burr Oaks 77. And yeah, we're going live pretty much every single day, multiple times a day. Thanks for having us on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. Love the insight, and hope to have you guys back on again sometime soon.
Absolutely, man. Good luck to Italy. Good luck to you guys. We're out.